I don't have a lot to say in this introduction other than the fact that this episode is probably the first one where I've had to really convince a guest to be on my show. Most of the time, the guests agree with just an email or a phone call or a verbal inquiry, but this one took a little bit of convincing, a few different calls, a few different requests, and finally we got him to appear. And guys, I think it's worth your time. Welcome to Your Favorite Book. And my guest today is Prasid Thapparamble, but as I know him, Dad. Hey, Dad, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, Dad. It's so good to have you on the show. I'm going to say in the intro of this show that you are the first guest I've had to really convince to be on the podcast. I mean, I got Mom, I got Neha, and usually the authors will come on and my other guests, but I really wanted you on the show and you were reluctant for a bit. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, there's a good reason for that. You know, a guy like me joins your show, your viewership, is going to drop significantly. And I was actually caring for you by doing that.
He's being very modest, everybody, because for those of you that don't know, and we're going to talk about it, my dad has a podcast of his own and a YouTube channel of his own, and he greatly outdoes what we do on this show. Let's just put it that way. And Dad, I mean, it's weird asking you to say a bit about yourself, but can you tell everyone about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I am the dad. Yes. My name is Prasid, and forget the last name. Prasid is good enough. And I've been in this country a good, 30 years now, something like that. And I grew up in India, southern part of India, a setting which you all know very well, middle-class setting. And I came here in 1991, 90, something like that. Mm-hmm. And, it's been a good journey so far. And we have lived in, Florida and various places of the country. And now we have settled down in this town here. And, what can I say? So I'm pretty much settled down American, I guess.
And yeah, you came here in the early 90s, and then myself and Neha came along, and it's been, a great life. I mean, what do you say?
Yeah, can't complain at all.
It really has been.
Yeah, it's been a great journey. I mean, if you think about it, I've spent more than half of my life in the U.S., so it's basically, that's all I remember now.
I think I quoted you once when I said to somebody, I don't remember, but it's, you spend so much time in a country and you go back to where you were before, and it's an odd feeling. You're not really coming home.
Yeah, yeah, that's happened many times. So when I go back to India for a short visit and you see things and, what's so-called progress, right? I mean, there's a lot of things westernized and things have sped up a lot. The kids were different and the language has gotten different. The colloquialism is very different.
Right.
And then, it's natural. I mean, it happens in every country and it's the same thing when I go back. And then, you going there to kind of checking out where you left off and what you see was different. And, there's beauty in that as well. Mm-hmm. So I go back in there and I try to kind of connect up to what I know best. And usually it's a short visit.
Yeah.
And then I'm back in the U.S. So it's, but the thing is this, when you are multicultural like this, you pick up pieces from multiple cultures and you adopt it as part of your lifestyle. So
Right. That's
not going to go away. So a part of me is always going to be Eastern. A part of me is going to be Western. That's the beauty of being a human. I mean, ability to change like that. And that's important.
I absolutely love that, Dad. And it leads in very nicely to what you've been doing in your spare time lately. And it's sort of embracing those aspects of where you came from and the memories you had of that those places by reading various short stories from authors you admired from India. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast and your YouTube channel?
Yeah, so this was, this is completely unplanned. I mean, so what happened one fine day was I was reading a Tamil book. I mean, this is a South Indian language, obviously. And I was reading by my favorite author, Sujata, that's his name. And I used to enjoy his writings when I was growing up there. And I read it and I was enjoyed it. And I was talking about it to my friends. I have a small friend group. My friends, shout out to them, PSG folks. and we chat most of the day. And my wife, your mom says that I spend more time with them than with her. So we chatted about the stories, and you know, one of my friends would come and say, "Hey, you know, I can't read Tamil that well. Can you just read it out as an audio file and put it out here?" Well, I did that. You know, I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah. You know me with projects. I love projects.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, great. Jump on it." So I did that, and I put it out there. And she said, "Yeah, that was great. I was able to follow it." You know, a few people said, "This is great. Can you do another one?" I was like, "Okay, sure. Why not?" So we did that. And then I found myself holding on to these audio files. And I'm like, where do I put this? You know, and I thought, you know, it's a lot easier to put it somewhere in YouTube. And then I realized YouTube, well, it's all video stuff. And where do I put my audio? Mm. I was like, screw this. I'm just going to put it out there because it's easy for me to do and easy to share links, etc. So that's how I started it. Mm-hmm. And I never advertised it. There was no real, you know, I'm trying to get viewership or anything like that. It was out there. And then it became a habit. You know, I started reading it every week or so. And slowly I found a niche audience who was looking for, you know, narrations of Tamil stories. And that became a thing. And the way I narrate, I kind of do a lot of voice modulations. Mm-hmm. Because I have a little bit of background of doing skits and plays and in college. So a little bit of those things got into me. It was fun for me to do those characters. And I was like, okay, this is great. Reading a book and acting it out. This is great. And there's an audience. And me being a Leo, it was brilliant. So it went on. And, you know, there's a sufficient amount of audience now waiting for it. Now I release a story almost every day.
Yeah.
So it's been fun, and it's become a thing I do now, you know. So that's and I did some English ones too, just to try it out. Mm-hmm. But obviously, the audience is more South Asian, so we kept with the Tamil stories.
Right, right. And I find it really interesting. You know, you just kind of started this project one fine day, like you describe it. You kind of started this around the same time I started this podcast. You know, mm-hmm. it's a sometimes the isolation, you know, you need to do something new with your time. You need to find a way to kind of try out new things and in a way reach out to new people. It was sort of what motivated me to start a podcast, and mm-hmm. you did too. And we both kind of found our audiences, and it's just been great. And I like listening to your stories. I've told you before, I don't understand Tamil. I wish I did, but it's nice to hear. I can still tell when you're voice acting. It's the same sort of voice acting you put into all the bedtime stories when we were kids.
That is true.
And it's just been great to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been fun, though. I mean, in this whole year we've had, the rough year we've had mm-hmm. you know, as humankind,
yep.
These kinds of things help. These little things which connect you to your past, and you're able to, you know, deliver something entertaining to people. It's a great thing to do.
It really is. And I'm interested in, so when I referred earlier that you were kind of reluctant to come on the show, part of it, you said you're going to lose viewership if I come on here, and I'm like, okay, Dad. But part of it was also you kept telling me, you know, I'm not a reader. I'm not like you or Mom. And to that, I'm saying, Dad, you've probably read more than both of us have this year. And it got, with all the stories you've been reading for the show, and it got me to think, you know, you are a reader and you've read your whole life, but obviously your reading tastes have changed with time. Can you talk about, you know, how your love for books or reading has changed over the years?
Yeah, certainly. So when I was in, you know, I would say early college is when I started reading, and most of them were, you know, Tamil stories. Obviously, Sujata's first one comes to mind. I did some readings in Malayalam as well. It's another language. Then the English one started pretty rapidly at around the time I read most of the thriller novels, you know, Arthur Haley's, those kinds of books. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed, you know, learning, actually. So if you read Haley's stuff, you know, you basically learn a particular thing. Like, for example, if it's a hospital or mm-hmm. airport, you get to know the entire airlines industry and how it works. So I kind of like that. Yeah. I learned a lot, and it became a lot of topic of conversation. Many of our, you know, college friends, et cetera, we talk about that and say, hey, have you read this? Have you read that? Have you read this? So it was great. So it went on that way. And then I, you know, we're talking about Forsyth today. And that was also mm-hmm. one of the authors which I was attached to. Before it all started, you know, actually, when I go to the nearby state in India called Kerala, which is we originally from, you know, my cousin had a set of books with him. And this was like eighth grade, ninth grade time frame. Mm-hmm. And I would go there and, you know, it was basically a village atmosphere there, you know, with ponds and fields and all that, which you don't get to see these days. Mm-hmm. So the library he had a lot of books, and I was voraciously reading the stuff he had. And some of them were really strange things. You know, he had a great book on world history. He was doing his undergraduate, and I would just read world history because I was very, very interested in history. And so I would read it. And so that was one. And then I saw he had a big Huck Finn book and Tom Sawyer book, and I would read from cover to cover of that because it kind of transports you to, you know, when Mark Twain writes stuff, you get transported to that place, you know. So I was really, really loving those. And that was during the summer vacations. And then I go back home to my parents' home, and we didn't have a lot of books. So basically it's magazines and things like that. And my dad would go to the circulation library, as we call it there, and he'll pick up English books and mostly thrillers. And I would read, you know, once he reads it, I'll steal it somehow and I'll read it quickly. Mm. So I was getting the same experiences as he was. And so that was my early habit. And then in college times, I started reading, you know, mostly thrillers, as I said. So it kept growing that way. And then once college was complete and I came and started working and everything, the reading habit dropped completely. And then I started working, and as I started improving on leadership jobs and things like that, I started doing a lot of nonfiction reading. Uh-huh. Because I felt there was a lot to be learned. And since I wasn't, you know, I studied engineering studies, we had very little softer literature in our curriculum. And so right. I was learning things, you know, how to actually, you know, things like games people play, those kinds of books, which helped me kind of work with the organizations I am with and people, relationships and things like that. So I focused more on nonfiction more than fiction.
Yeah.
Many reasons. The fiction novels are all based on Nazi Germany at that time, and I was in the kind of stuff I was reading. That is
right.
And I'd read a lot of that. And I when I came back to the U.S. and I was working, the novels didn't really interest me anymore, and nor did I have time to read the classics at that time. So the whole. Yeah. You know, where you are changes you a little bit. And so that's where I left off. And, you know, now, as you said, and now I'm reading for the podcast. And so I'm reading all these older novels of this person called Sujata in Tamil. And I love his writing. This is like, you know, fantastic. I mean, this is 80s life, 90s life in India. So it connects me back to where I'm from. So it's a little bit of history. As I read them. So I can ramble on forever. So
for a certain point, I was just like, Dad, you can just keep talking, you know, we don't need to discuss anything further. But I love a lot of what you're saying here. And it kind of just goes to show that on this show, you know, reading is reading. And everyone that comes on this show, there's just a different thing that lights them up. I truly believe that everybody's got a type of book that fits them, or a certain book, and maybe that's different at different points in your life. But whether it be, you know, fiction, nonfiction, classics, thrillers, there's a book out there for everyone. And you got me to read out of my comfort zone for this episode, which is always something I like to do. Mm-hmm. And today's episode, for everybody listening, this is a book called No Comebacks by Frederick Forsyth. It's a collection of short stories by Frederick Forsyth, who's actually known more for novels. I believe some of his other books are Day of the Jackal, Dogs of War, Odessa File. So he's written a lot of thriller novels, a lot of them centering around World War II, like you mentioned, and you know, other times of espionage and things like that. This book dates back to 1982, so before me, but not before you, Dad. Sorry to date you. But, but Dad, I want to ask you, you know, so this book came out in 1982, but do you recall where you were in life when you first picked up this book and what kind of impression it had on you?
Yeah. So the history of this one is, I think I can vaguely remember, but I'll give it a shot. So sure. I read Frederick Forsyth's first one, The Day of the Jackal, which is what really shot him into the limelight. Mm-hmm. It was a brilliant book. It was a really well-executed thriller. And it also, you know, kept us at the edge of the seat when you're reading it. Mm-hmm. And so that was good. And then later it was Odessa File, which was fantastic. It was another great thriller of the times. So, you know, so having read those books, and I think I even read The Dogs of War. And then when No Comebacks came, and I'm thinking this is probably when I was in my postgrad is when I picked it up. So it's probably 86 when I picked it up, or maybe earlier than that. I can't remember exactly where. But I read that. So first and foremost, when I saw No Comebacks, one of my friends was talking about it. He said, hey, you got to read this. And there's this, you know, this story called No Comebacks. And the first story in this, which is outstanding, you got to read it. It just blows your mind. And I was like, okay, Frederick Forsyth and short stories. That intrigued me a lot because he's not known for that. Right. That's probably his, you know, maiden try, I guess. So I read it and I couldn't really put it down because all these stories are very different and same in a way. Yeah. You know what I mean? So they all tried to be mini Frederick Forsyth novels, you know, so his style of writing. And first time I read it, I totally enjoyed it. Few stories, I never got it at that time. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's the point of this story? I remember thinking about it. So yeah, that was, I did that in the 80s. I know that for sure, but I'm not able to place exactly which year I read it.
Interesting. Yeah. I was surprised you read it pretty soon after it came out. So, you know, it came out in the early 80s, and then 1986, you picked it up. And then I know you reread it recently for the show, and, you know, some 30 odd years later, you know, what was it like the second time around?
Yeah, the second time around, I could see changes in me as well. So, for example, I can jump into one of the stories.
Go for it.
There are no snakes in Ireland. When I read that first, I was obviously impressed with the story, no doubt about it. But when the story has a lot of racist undertones in there, and when you read that when you were there living in India, I didn't feel a thing about it. I was feeling that, why is he rude? That was what I was thinking about mostly. Why is he rude on this, you know, this guy? And all he wants to do is work in this place, and he's just being normal, and this guy is rude for no reason. Yeah. I didn't understand that. And now when I read it back, I see racism written all over. And I totally get it now because I understand it a little bit better being in this context. So that I could certainly see a difference there.
Yeah.
What do you think?
For context, you know, to give everyone a bit about this story. So No Snakes in Ireland, definitely one of the stories I wanted to talk about here. It features a young Indian man in Ireland who comes to work and he wants to save money while he's studying medicine. And he's working basically construction in this Irish construction crew that's never seen a person like him before. And it was such an odd feeling reading a British person's take on an Indian person, you know, what they might be thinking and feeling. I thought Forsyth's, you know, depiction of this character, while it was outdated in some ways, there was a certain amount of empathy given for him and his experiences, and his rage and his emotional growth felt just as justified as Forsyth does for his other protagonists who are all white men. So I appreciated that those characters were treated evenly. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Yeah, that the when you don't have that context, because 1986, you hadn't moved to America yet. Mm-hmm. So there's finally you kind of maybe saw being in a new country, being different in a new country, not saying you experienced what this character experienced, but there's a bit more context there.
Yeah, yeah, that and another thing I saw is holes in the plot.
Yeah.
You know, so when I was reading there, I didn't fully see all that. When I read that now, you know, why would a guy studying to be a doctor try to work in a construction industry filled with larger men? And, you know, that seemed odd to me because that's not a natural job choice for anybody who's trying to be a doctor, and you're not going to do physical labor, you know, to support yourself. So there were obvious things like that which didn't make any sense for me, I felt.
Yeah, I agree with that. There are definitely, and it's in some of these stories, you can see that kind of the circumstances these characters are put into, you wonder, okay, is this the most plausible circumstance in the world? There's a certain amount of suspension of disbelief you have to be into to get sort of lost in the story. And honestly, lots of writers do that. We all do it. Yeah. You have to sort of assume a few things to get the story moving. But I'm interested in knowing, Dad, did you know the whole story of No Snakes in Ireland? You know how that became a thing that people say?
No, I didn't know that.
I studied abroad in Ireland, and another Indian person walking around in Ireland, I guess. and I learned the story. Apparently, the myth goes, or the legend is, that St. Patrick of St. Patrick's Day drove out all the snakes from Ireland. So that's the legend. Apparently, I looked into it scientifically speaking. Apparently, the climate shifts didn't allow for snakes really to be hospitable, and I only skimmed the articles, but it wasn't a very hospitable climate for snakes. And so really there are no evidences of fossil snakes in Ireland. So historically speaking, there were no real snakes there. And this sort of legend came about surrounding that as well, which I thought was interesting. And I didn't know how well known of a thing this was. And then I just started seeing it pop up everywhere. So I thought it'd be fun to bring up.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, and so No Snakes in Ireland was definitely an interesting one. And I'm curious now, Dad, could you pick a favorite story out of this collection?
I would say Privilege was my favorite. Mm-hmm. I know everybody picks No Comebacks. The first story is an obvious choice, but I actually like Privilege a lot better. It's actually more relevant today than anywhere. You know, so
Can you summarize that one for us?
Yeah, Privilege is an interesting story where, you know, it's about a helpless victim. You know, he's a common man, you know, stuck in a situation, and, you know, somebody writes about him or his business in the newspaper, not his business, but him personally, naming him. There is no truth to the matter, but he just, instead of researching, this journalist just wrote something about him, which basically destroyed his business. And he really wanted to get it straight. He just wants to walk over to that person. I mean, not to the person, to the newspaper company, and just say, hey, please set the story straight. I do have enough information to back me up. And nobody would give him the time of day to actually listen to him. And so he tries, I don't know if I do the spoilers here, but he tries, basically goes to the newspaper, you know, tries talking to a lawyer. And the lawyer says, hey, you know, these newspapers are very large. These are national newspapers. You're not going to win that. And they're not going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those situations where even today you face that. You know, somebody writes something. I mean, today even a tweet is much of a factor.
Right.
So it's hard to undo that with logic. I mean, you know, we have a situation today when, you know, facts are no longer interesting for people. It's just newsworthiness is questionable now. I mean, anybody can be a journalist just by tweeting something, right?
Yeah, fake news.
So it's so relevant today, that story. And you know, what happens is really this small person studies the law and figures out a way to get back. And that was, you know, I'm not going to say more than that, but I thought it was a very relevant story, and it had a punch to it, and it still holds good. That's what I thought.
I did like that story too, and I thought one of the highlights of that story, which comes out in a lot of Forsyth stories, is just the amount of attention to detail he brings to his subject matter. So he's someone who's very big on research, and I imagine it probably comes from his past as a novelist, when you really get that time to develop and really study certain subject matters. And in that story, I felt like the research was very well integrated into the plot versus, you know, you compare it to something like No Comebacks, which No Comebacks, while it has that very thrilling ending, which we're not going to spoil, it spends a lot of time kind of talking about little intricacies of things and details, and it takes you out of the movement of the story, and it becomes kind of a showcase of look at all these things you can learn. So I really like that you say, you know, No Comebacks, while it's that most well-known story, may not be the best one at integrating, you know, everything Force it's trying to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. And one story which really, you know, pissed me off a little bit is The Emperor. You know, I mean, it's a large story. And I know I'm jumping off topic here, but that story, you know, it's about a henpecked husband kind of becoming a man, so to speak. towards the end. But I think it's a concocted story is what I felt. I felt that our man Forsyth just learned about fishing. It's kind of Hemingway-ish. It's an old man in the sea kind of thing, you know, and he just wanted to create a Hemingway style story where, you know, he wanted to go through the old man in the sea concept, you know, just being alone in the sea. I mean, he spent a lot of time on fishing.
Right.
And I mean, it was well written. That area was well done. I'll give it that. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the pieces seemed fixed in to finish up a story. I just wanted to finish it at the end, you know.
Right. I agree. I was thinking about that one too. I was like, the descriptions of fish and fishing and all took so long. It was one of the longer stories. And I like the old man and the sea comparison because honestly, Hemingway, that story isn't even really about fishing. It's about fishing is kind of, but this one was really about fishing. And it's like, how long could you read about fishing? And I think it brings to mind another thing that, you know, Forsyth does to varying degrees of success, and that's sometimes the characters that he writes. He falls into some similar patterns with a lot of these characters. A lot of them have to deal with, you know, masculinity, you know, what it means to find and reclaim manhood. And he does that in different ways. And some of these characters are really quite interesting. You have the main character, the billionaire from No Comebacks, who's interesting. He's portrayed in a very kind of sardonic manner. But then you have this henpecked husband in The Emperor. Yeah. You have the old man in Used in Evidence, which is probably my favorite story in this collection, because I just thought the crime angle of that was just so interesting. And I don't know, I really enjoyed that story.
Yeah, I agree. But that was an interesting story too. It had a really nice twist to it. It seemed to go in one direction, and there was a nice ending to it as well.
It was. And I enjoy crime stories in general, and the investigative nature of that. It really felt like this had a lot more consequence versus something like The Emperor. I was like, okay, you're trying to catch a big fish, like not as big of a deal.
Two other stories also caught my eye when I read it second time. One was a silly story called There Are Some Days, which is basically kind of a Murphy's Law story. You know, so essentially it's a beautifully titled sort of the story, because this talks about, you know, the story is about when things go wrong, they really go wrong. I mean, it's more humor than a real story, I thought. It was it's almost like a James Thurber essay, you know, so it was just neat. So when I read it the second time, I actually enjoyed it better than when I read it the first time. Money with Menaces had this very weak character of Samuel Nutkin, who's who finds a magazine in the bus or train or whatever, and in an adult magazine, and then, you know, how he you know, contacts that number, and you know, and then he's like, he wants to get away from it. That characterization of him was actually well done, because it did not it felt that, okay, he's so weak, I mean, he doesn't know what to do, kind of a thing. And And towards the end, there was a nice surprise in the end. So it was actually a pretty decent story as well.
Yeah, I liked that one as well. I thought the ending was an interesting twist. There were some, you know, foreshadowing elements, which sometimes I wondered, you know, some of the endings, the twist endings make a lot more sense if you foreshadow them properly. And sometimes Forsyth does that, and sometimes he doesn't. The endings kind of come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But that one, I thought it was foreshadowed nicely. Yeah. And it was a really interesting story because that character was so kind of pathetic, and he really leans into that aspect. And I thought that was really interesting and well done. I think probably the thing that kept me from loving this collection is probably just a nature of Fawcett's writing, which is he focuses more on plot than on character.
Yeah, he does.
That's kind of a thing you see from the thriller genre as a whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just part of the genre. It's one of the reasons I don't read a lot of thrillers, but the stories that do lean into more character are certainly, you know, much more engaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at it, I mean, my argument against that is, you know, I think he comes from the area of entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you write thrillers, you are trying to sell books, really.
Right.
If you look at his background, right, his background, I believe he spent a lot of time in Ireland.
Yeah.
I believe he worked for MI6 or MI5, I'm not sure.
Mm.
So he has a lot of that crime, I wouldn't say crime, I mean, it's more espionage background.
Right.
I'm not saying he's a spy, I'm not at all saying that. But he has a lot of that background, so it goes into many of his stories. So he looks at everything with a shadow attached to it. You know, there's mm-hmm. always a story behind a story. So he spends a lot of time in plot. I mean, definitely. I mean,
yeah.
You can see that. And there is probably one or two characters he builds and he showcases them, but he leaves the rest away. I mean, it's right. basically one or two characters against a huge plot. That's, you know, if you look at Odessa File,
yeah.
That's how it is. You know, it starts off with one character and then follows through one character. So he's able to hold the whole novel with that. So that's his style anyway.
And it's not a bad thing at all. It really just comes down to a matter of personal taste. And, you know, depending on what you're looking to read, a plot-based story just might be what you want. And that's what I always tell to my listeners, you know, there is no one book that appeals to everybody and no one book that's going to appeal to every state of mind. Sometimes you're in the mood for a gripping thriller or mm-hmm. just these concise stories that are going to sort of keep you off balance. And if that's what you're looking for, this might be the kind of book for you.
Yeah, it's totally. I mean, I think that goes to my attraction to short stories too. I mean, short stories to me, how do I best say it? You know, for cricket lovers, there's a test match and there's a one-day cricket.
Right.
I mean, I know, you know, some people know cricket. So short stories are like one-day cricket, you know, so you're in and out, your strategies are shorter, you want to get in, get out, get entertained, move on to the mm-hmm. next game. Whereas, you know, novels, you got to spend more time on it, you're invested in the character, you want to see growth, you want to see the climax, you want to see the conflict. Here it's like a ripple in a pond in a short story. So you're dropping something in there and you want a single event is going to transform the story. So it's sharp. So I feel, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm one-sided on this, obviously. I feel writing a good short story is very difficult.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is because I've spoken to short story writers on this show. For those of you that might have listened to my episode with Brandon Taylor a few weeks back, Brandon Taylor basically talked about writing his most recent short story collection and how his debut novel took him 5 weeks, but mm-hmm. some of these short stories he had worked on for years. And it just really goes to show that it's so difficult. And often that constraint to tell mm-hmm. a good story in a short number of pages, in a short amount of time, choosing which details to include and which ones don't make the cut, that's harder than just writing everything down sometimes.
That is
it's
true.
Real talent.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so you got to get the attention of the person quickly and get on with the story and still build the character so that you can actually, you know, attach to the person's psyche. So it's harder to write a really good short story, I feel. I mean, anyway.
It is. I mean, I agree. As someone who's trying to write short stories now, and, you know, some people are more bent towards that craft than others. And I find myself, you know, falling into that craft more than writing longer form work. But it's still hard. It's difficult to do. But it's a genre I love reading. To me, there's nothing better than a really well-crafted short story or a group of short stories. I think that's something I get from you because I know when I talk to Mom, she likes these big, giant novels. And I'm like, Mom, it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I look at the size of the book and I go, oh, I do have a pillow already. I don't need this.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention. So when I had my mom on the show way back in season one, the book she chose, which was Herzog by Saul Bellow, is a book that she recommended to you. And in her words, you read one page and gave it back.
Yeah, I read that. I mean, you know, this was when we were dating many years ago, and this is the book she gives me, and she said, "You must read it." And I was like, "Okay, great, I must read it, I guess." So I read the first page. I was like, "What are we doing?" So that's that.
And did you recommend this one to her at all?
The story is that, you know, I didn't recommend this one to her, but there was a time when we were dating. So we were walking on a street in Hyderabad, and, you know, here I am trying to impress her with the books I read. You know, obviously she's read way more books and way more classics than I have. And I tell her, "Hey, have you read Not a Penny More, Not a Penny Less by Jeffrey Archer?" And she looks at me and says, "Silly book." And I was like, okay, I should not open my mouth from here on.
I'm laughing because I think I've definitely said something exactly the same to my husband too. So history repeats itself. So, and yeah. Dad, before we close out the episode today, you know, something I like to do for my listeners is for people who are interested in short stories or interested in our conversation today, I always like to give recommendations, you know, provide some suggestions for further reading. And Dad, I want to start with you. For people who, you know, might enjoy a good thriller or maybe enjoyed No Comebacks or just want to know something that you enjoy reading, what's another book you'd recommend?
You know, if I go with the short story genre, I mean, I'm not that well read, I'll be honest. but you know, I enjoy really well-written short stories. I've read a lot of Chekhov and O. Henry's. Obviously, everybody has. You know, Dubliners is something I want to read. I have not read yet. So that's one. And then I read one way back when, Salinger's Teddy. There's a short story called Teddy in his one of his short story collections. I remember the ambiguous ending in the end, and I really wanted to finish the rest. I've never done that, so I want to do I believe it's called Nine Stories or something.
Nine Stories, yep.
Yeah, I've not finished that, so I want to do that. So those are things I want to do, right? So I've not done that. But when it comes to books, I look for things which I get attracted to, and mostly these are going to be short stories. In my current setting, it's hard for me to pick up a novel. I have done that. I've read a few when you guys have told me. I've read a few of them, but I would much rather gravitate towards short story collection.
And I think in keeping with that, the two books that I picked out, which are, you know, sort of suggested reading, both are short story collections. And Dad, I just love the fact that you start with, "I'm not very well read," and then mention, "I've read a lot of Chekhov." And I'm like, "Dad, what?" I'm sorry, those don't go together. But anyway, the two books I'd recommend, and you already alluded to one, the first is Dubliners by James Joyce, which I read a number of years ago. And I think, you know, what could appeal to readers of this is the Ireland setting. Obviously, it's very middle-class Ireland, which James Joyce, you know, has a clear love for his country when he writes these stories. He has a clear love for the people that he writes about. And if you know anything about James Joyce and are intimidated by a lot of his work, this is easily his most accessible book. And by that, I mean, it's the only one of his books I've ever finished. All of his other books are just a lot. Mom wanted me to read Ulysses for this show, and I had to say no. So... But so Dubliners is one recommendation I have. The other book that I'd recommend, it's sort of way out of left field, but I think it's a modern interpretation of some of the themes that Forsyth does in this collection. And it's a book that recently came out, and it's called Give My Love to the Savages by Chris Stuck. Mm-hmm. And this is a short story collection. It's very, very new. I have a review of it if you want to check that out. But Give My Love to the Savages is a short story collection that focuses on ideas of masculinity, specifically Black masculinity, and how that's interpreted in modern society. We even have like a very exaggerated billionaire character in one of the stories that's reminiscent of the No Comebacks billionaire. We have a few characters that are sort of henpecked or, you know, struggling to find what it means to be a man. There are some stories that are very absurd and way out of left field, but some of the best stories just sort of take on this idea of a man being pushed to his breaking point and having to make choices that either define who he is or, you know, define what society expects of him. And they're very accessible stories for the most part overall. And so I think if you're looking for a modern book that takes on some of what Forsyth is trying to do, maybe with a more literary bent, but not so literary, I think this would be a good collection to check out.
Excellent. I should check out that as well.
Yeah, I have a copy. I'll give it to you, Dad.
Perfect.
And so everyone, thank you all for listening today. Dad, if we want to check out your show and the other stuff you do, where can we find you?
Oh, yeah. It's the podcast is called Radio Pras. It's spelled radio followed by P-R-A-S. It mostly covers Tamil narrations. I do have a few English ones in there just to try it out. But essentially, that's it. And especially if you're a South Asian following Tamil literature or anything like that, you will enjoy it. So
you definitely should check it out. If anything, just to get a feel for my dad's voice acting. I really think he could have made a career out of it, but that might be my bias. But Dad, thank you so much for your time and for introducing me to something I wouldn't have picked up on my own. And I had a great time.
I had a fantastic time. I thought I'm going to bomb it completely, but I had a great time talking to you. And, you know, do check the viewership. I mean, if it drops, you know, I'd say, well, yeah, I told you so.